It's been a little complicated. There have been several possibilities, the possibility of discussing a late film by Esther Schub, Spain, made in 1939, a possibility of trying to go through Schub's trajectory, etc. And in the end, with the short time that remains us before lunch or before the break, I thought I would try and put Schub in context, and possibly this context would include, would involve parallel lives of Schub and Dziga Vertov. So there may be quite a few quotes, that's why I have all of this, all of these things with me. I hope you'll bear with me. This is why, this is blank paper, I don't need it, but anyway. So maybe we can start, maybe we should start with the, with early 29. Early 29, Schub is in Berlin to collect materials for Sievodnia today. And she's not the only one in Berlin. Dziga Vertov is there to present Man with a Movie Camera. Alexander Dovzhenko is there to present Arsenal. Trainin, a bureaucrat of the party, of the film administration, is there. Others are there. Yerofeyev, Vladimir Yerofeyev, a very interesting documentary filmmaker, is there shooting a film about Berlin and Germany. Chervyakov, a young actor turned director recently with a film about brothers on one side and on the other side from a novel by Fadeyev. I don't remember the title of the film, but...
Yes, Citizen Years.
People in Years, yes.
Citizen Years.
Yes, Citizen Years. So Chervyakov is there preparing the film. Konstantin Eggert is there too. He's one of the most successful commercial directors in the Soviet Union. His Wedding of the Bear was the biggest commercial success in 27. So there is a lot, there are a lot of people in the Soviet colony. Next to the White Russian colony, Masyukin is there shooting at Neubabelsberg and so on and so forth. And the interesting thing is that the group, actually, the closest group is Schub, Vertov, and Dovzhenko. Schub is spending her days watching newsreel at Neubabelsberg or going to MLK, the Munich production company, to view newsreel. Then later on she will do a little shooting of her own in Berlin, but they're invited wherever the avant-garde is active in Berlin, they are there. They're invited, the three of them are invited at Moholy-Nagy. They're going to see Gropius, they're going to see, I don't know who else, but anyway, you can guess more or less. They're seeing, they're watching new films, they're interested in new techniques. They're watching Submarine, early sound film, Singing Fool, the first sound film shown, the first American sound film shown in Berlin. Submarine, which is probably the Capra film. They go to see Drei Groschenoper on stage and so on and so forth. And it's interesting that at this point, there is a unity and a friendship between those people who will later on be artificially separated and turned into not enemies, but into stranger to one another. So perhaps it would be interesting, not very scientific historically, but interesting to try and have a view of personal relationship with this, because those personal relationships are extremely close. People are living next to one another, just as a group, the Novi Lev group, for instance, they're meeting every day and they're bad-mouthing everybody else and deciding to change alliances and so on and so forth. And those things may sound like anecdotes, but actually there's a stuff. Film history has been made ever since, even if we don't want to look at it that way. So Vertov, this triangle, Vertov, Dovzhenko, Shub is interesting because we have the pioneer of documentary film, the creator of the Soviet newsreel, Zygavertov, starting right after the civil during the civil war, actually, on instructions by Mikhail Kaltsov, journalist, activist also in Spain, model for a character in Hemingway's novel, returning to the Soviet Union after and being arrested and shot at the end of the 30s. So Kaltsov and Vertov are at the origin not only of the Soviet newsreel, but also of most possible non-fiction forms imaginable. Vertov at some point extremely hurt that Shub is considered the creator of the compilation film, is protesting this and listing everything that he has invented himself. It's a little sad, but at the same time, it's completely true. He says, 40 issues of Kino and Idelia, Cine Week, 50 issues of Goskino Kalendar, all issues of Kino Pravda, a monthly newsreel, monthly very, very edited newsreel with few exceptions, the chronologically constructed anniversary of the revolution, 12 reels, history of the civil war, 13 parts, 5 years of the Red Army. So compilation films far before Vertov starts on his construction experiments, before Vertov devises with the manifesto We and with the later Kino Pravda editions, his concept of filming, what is a film for himself. So we have this as the background of Vertov. The background of Shub, as you know, is re-editing, editing newsreel and re-editing foreign fiction films, which was a necessity, a need. Every fiction film, every foreign fiction film was being re-edited to fit viewers' requirements, obviously to fit censorship requirements. Incidentally, the reverse was absolutely true. All Soviet films in the West were re-edited by censorship. I've seen films I've seen The Mother by Pudovkin edited for Switzerland. There's hardly a mention of a strike in it. And so Shub learned her trade at re-editing films for Soviet release. There's a famous anecdote about her re-editing Dr. Mabuse by Fritz Lang for a shorter version. Mabuse had been a tremendous success in its original two-part version, and she had to re-edit it, a shorter one-part, one-hour-and-a-half version, which she did with the help of Eisenstein. And we have the list of titles, which sound very much like what we have seen here, labels put on character. Instead of dramatic titles, dialogue titles, for instance, dramatic or drama or that, or comments. Her comments are always of the kind that label people as this or that degenerate. Degenerate is a word that returns very often in those subtitles for Dr. Mabuse. So we have more or less during the 20s, I would say, when in 26, Shub manages to get the authorization to do a compilation film about the Roman of the fall of the Romanov dynasty. Until the beginning of the 30s, we have more or less parallel lives. Shub gets a very enthusiastic reception for the three film, for those three famous compilation films, of which we only have seen two, while Vertov and Eisenstein are criticized for their so-called experiments. Exactly at the same time, in 27, Vertov for a sixth part of the world and Eisenstein for October. October is generally attacked, well, for reasons of so-called experimentalism, by Novilev and Shub's friends for reenacting history, for reenacting recent history, which should not be, which should only be reconstructed with the truth of the filmed materials. Of course, this is completely misunderstanding Eisenstein's film, which is dominated, I think, that has come true in recent years, of which the dominant feature is not political propaganda, but irony towards recent history. But that's another subject. So at that point, we have at the same time hostility build up between Shub, Eisenstein, Werthoff, and more or less they're working in the same direction. If you've seen a film by Werthoff called The Sixth Part of the World, 1927, you can see that the first reel of this film is completely meant as an answer to the second reel of The Sixth Part of the World. The second reel of Sixth Part of the World is a film poem about the all places in the Soviet Union. It's a poem about the differences of life, of preserved lives, actually, preserved customs. It's not at all about modernity. And concluding with all of this, this country, etc., all of this is yours. It is yours, the country of socialism. You are the masters of of 1/6 part of the world. Shub uses the same device of starting a poem through intertitles, illustrating it with views of north, south, east, west of the Soviet Union, and showing it then as a preserved part, but then switching to something else, which is a modernization of the country. And from there on, but that's another story. I'm going back to my short chronology, which is not going to take, I hope, too long. So, and the 34, 35 are the last years in which projects, personal projects by Werthoff as well as Shub can be made. Werthoff makes three songs about Lenin, on which he works for several years, released in 34. And Shub makes one of the very, very few films completed for the 20th anniversary of the October Revolution. It's interesting because Shumyatsky's administration was supposed to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the revolution with a lot of film, as many as in 27, where you had Pudovkin, Shub, Eisenstein, Barnett, etc., competing to commemorate the anniversary. At the end of 37, only one fiction film has been completed, Lenin in October by Mikhail Rom, and only one film, one compilation film, which is Strana Soviet, of the Land of the Soviet, by Shub. Though the interesting fact is that those completely official films by Werthoff about Lenin, Shub about the Land of the Soviets, are very quickly withdrawn of circulation, which it's almost a ban. The films are actually released, so they're not literally banned, but they're getting a very, very limited release and disappear very quickly. This is one of Shub's films that has been all but forgotten, except as a title in film histories. And from there on, and as for Werthoff, Three Songs About Lenin is re-released, but re-edited with more Stalin, of course, and with less of the other, in the meantime, disappeared leaders of the revolution. In 38, the only version that we know the only original version that we know of Three Songs About Lenin in its sound version is the version of 1938, not the one originally released in 1934. From there on, there are very few original projects. All the projects fail. You will hear later on about Shub's project about women in the Soviet Union. That was early on. But the story of Shub and of Vertov is the history of failed project, mutilated, maimed project. Vertov manages to do his big film about women in the Soviet Union. It's called Lullaby in 1938. But the film is completely mutilated by the omnipresent, all ubiquity of Stalin. And from there on, none of his projects gets off the ground. One project by Shub is made, Spain. So Spain is an interesting film because it is done after the fact. It's a compilation film done in 1939 when the war in Spain, when the civil war in Spain is already over. It's a defeat. It's done just before the Molotov-Ribbentrop agreement. And it's an anti-fascist film based on material which the whole Soviet Union had seen as newsreels every week between 1936 and 1937. It's also a film made with many hands. Roman Karmen and Makaseyev, his cameraman. Roman Karmen as a cameraman, director, and Makaseyev as a cameraman, had shot for 1 year in Spain on the front. Beautiful material, shot completely in the constructivist Soviet monumental aesthetics. Mikhail Kaltsov initiated the film. And it's interesting that Shub insists on many people that had been whose names had been completely erased in her autobiography. She mentioned, pointedly mentioned, that Koltsov was the originator of the film. But then Koltsov couldn't make it, and indeed we know why. And Carmen was already off to China by that time. So she made the film with the playwright Wisniewski. And Wisniewski is the author of the Optimistic Tragedy, which was a huge success. And he had written a film, We from Kronstadt, which was also a huge, completely official success. According to Shub's extremely modest memoirs, all the imaginations, the inventions that you can find in that film, she ascribes to Wisniewski. He says, for instance, using the narration to reconstruct dialogue on film that you have silent. She says, Wisniewski suggested to have those two peasants talking, and then the narration says it with a distance. Or Wisniewski devises battle scenes, and she follows them because Wisniewski was familiar with the Russian Civil War, and so on. So a lot of the things that are interesting in Spain come from Wisniewski. A lot of them come from the composer Gavril Popov, whose first score for a film you will hear later on. We'll return to Popov. So, and from there on, we have this extraordinary situation that apart from their work for the war effort, editing film for the front or about the front for the people behind the lines, or editing newsreels, which is what they do most, Vertov and Shub both, so Vertov completely ignored, but Shub still an official figure, are completely put aside of the documentary film production. Vertov's last activity is 45. After 45, Shub is a chief editor, the redactor of many newsreels. She's the redactor, for instance, of the Victory Day newsreel, May 9th. But after that, Vertov does not work at all, except for a few odd newsreels, maybe once or twice a year. And Shoup's last documentaries are of 47 and 48, and those are not done in the Central Documentary Film Studio. They're done far, far away, which is always an interesting sign. So that's a little in that's a fast motion trajectory, I'm afraid, but time is lacking to say much more. But it would be interesting to draw parallels instead of opposing the two, to draw the parallels in their lives and in their work. Now, I would like to very briefly oppose them. I don't know how much time we still have, but what did Vertov do? What did Shoup do? What did they ask for? Vertov, of course, as you know, wrote a lot. His works have been published in English. His diaries, his complete diaries, have been published in German only, but edited diaries are included in the English volume. The edited diaries are very strictly edited by an already mentioned Mr. Drobashenko in Moscow, who was a very careful man, who still is, I think. Shoup also wrote a lot, not only this autobiography, but from 26 on, she took part in polemics, she took part in she wrote for film papers, Kinofot first. Kinofot was run by Alexei Gann, a constructivist, who was her husband. Early on, and Kinofot was the first paper to promote, to champion Newsreel, published Vertov also. Vertov was published in Kinofot, where Vertov was published in the original Lief, the magazine by Mayakovsky. Shoup wrote in all those papers, and she took sides very strongly. For instance, when Vertov published The Manufacture of Facts, Shoup took a stand against the monopoly of documentary production being given to Vertov. There was hardly a chance of that ever happening, but still, she was fall of the Romanov dynasty was released, she was asking for her own space in documentary film production, and slightly criticized, gently criticizing Vertov in a language that would never change, even through her life, through the 30s, and even through her autobiography in 59, in which she still says, what she says in basically in 26, the studio, the documentary film studio, must remove its futuristic sign and become simply a factory for non-played cinema where people could work on editing newsreel, on editing films of the history of revolution made from newsreel footage, where scientific production films and general culture film as counterweight to played entertainment would be made. And she ends with a peek on Vertov. We do not need a factory of facts if it is to manufacture facts. She later takes 27. She later takes part in a symposium which makes up most of Novi Lev last issue for 27. So October commemoration of October in the 11th, 12th issue of Novi Lev, in which all, except for Mayakovsky, all participants of Novi Lev discuss the thing. Tretyakov, of course, who is the most official of them all, and Shklovsky, who is the most unpredictable. And Shklovsky has there a point. People are trying to renew alliances with Vertov, who has been hurt by criticism of his films, by Brick and Shklovsky, Eisenstein, who has been hurt by criticism of his acted Lenin, and so on and so forth. And Shklovsky is the only one probably to say very clearly that the similarities are closer, maybe more important to point out than the gaps between them. You say fiction film means Kuleshov and Eisenstein, and non-fiction film, Shub and Vertov. But they all sat together in the same crowd, and Shub learned montage on fiction films, while the fiction film director learned assemblage on the newsreel, meaning Kuleshov. We should not exaggerate the fictional side of art. The fact of fiction is established, but art periodically undergoes a re-emphasis on raw material, which was the emphasis at the time on literature of facts, in which even someone like Tinyanov was being criticized for writing novels of fact. So, again, while, as you know, Vertov creating the Kinoki group was trying to establish a philosophy of a film reconstruction, a filmed communistic reconstruction of the world through the means of film, which is something that you can see in his first feature, Kinoglass, for instance, or which you can see also in the Lenin Kinopravda, for instance, in which the compilation of newsreel is not chronological at all, but conceptual. You can see that, of course, this culminates in Man with a Movie Camera. So at the same time, Vertov was training groups of cameramen. He was sending them all over the country with strict instructions as to what to film, how to film it, and with the motto developed several times. I don't have the book, it's somewhere here. Developed several times in Yacht, okay, in his writing, that editing should not be something that happens at the end of the film. Editing should be a continuous process from beginning to end, meaning editing starts when you choose the object that you are going to film. So this is developed at length in the collection of Vertov's writing published by Annette Michelson. I'm sure you can find that and read it, and it's extremely interesting to read in comparison to Shub's writings, which are more of a practical nature. Shub claims that she should have better means to do newsreel film. There should be more cooperation between camera people, editors, and the director. Of course, this is what she manages to do in Sivodnya, where she goes with her camera people, Stylianoudis, and I don't know who the other one is, but no matter. And she shoots herself. She goes through the country and shoots all the material that you've seen there, Baku, Far East, etc., is something that she personally shot in 29 before finishing the film, which is extremely interesting. But what Shub basically requires in her pieces, in her articles, in her polemics, is better means for the newsreel. It's practically a kind of a unionist claim of do help us make better films with better means. It has very little to do with the theoretic view of Vertov. And what does she do in regard to her aesthetic? She said, we are not afraid. Well, she has obviously things that you have seen here that you may see in the Romanov dynasty, is we're not afraid of the fact that the non-fiction characters' natural movements might be embarrassed in front of the camera. For even when he is taking a pose and acting, he reveals himself, and every pose is revealing of his personality. I've deliberately not cut such movements out of my films, which is true, but which is very seldom to be seen, I must say, in those films. But as far as montage, apparently there is no tier of montage with Shub. Montage too, she writes, this is from a piece in Kino e Cultura, 1929. Montage too has its own laws to act emotionally on the spectator, which is already something completely different from what Vertov is claiming. To this end, we use the classical American cutting, classical American montage, which means that she is on the side, more or less, of what Kuleshov says, using American montage means basically fast montage, as opposed to Russian montage, which at that time meant pre-revolutionary slow montage. And Kuleshov in Noviliev in 27 wrote the same about Shub. Shub's work is a step forward in our cinematic culture. Its main virtue is the technical quality of montage, which is cultured and not used as an aesthetic device to transmit the subjective emotions of the editor. Again, Vertov is the aim of the peak, but as a means to express and organize the material, to bring out its thematic essence. So we see that the American montage is more or less what Eisenstein blamed Kuleshov and other filmmakers for, calling it a montage of putting one brick, laying one brick over another. Of course, this was again a jest against Ossip Brik, who had been a strong critic of October. So brick on brick is Kuleshov's style of montage, and is also Shub's way of editing. As you can see in her films, and as you can see in those films that you can view possibly for lack of better prints on YouTube, like Spain, you can see that her montage always works according to the same law of montage devised more or less by Griffith's Intolerance. That is, building up of dramatic tension, acceleration of movement, acceleration of shots, directional continuity, intensification of emotion, the most violent shots come at the end, etc., which makes the shot more or less reversible. If you look at the coal miners in Sievodnia, those pictures are called slave labor because they're in America and there are blacks, black coal miners. But if you look at those pictures, those images have become the very icons of Stakhanovism. If you take practically the same images there, they have become, in all Soviet newsreels of the 30s, Vertov and Shub included, the symbols of the victory of socialism and of industrialization. And they get their meaning with Shub, they get their meaning only with intertitles, which tell you what to think according to a party line. With Vertov, you never have the party line, you always have Vertov's crazy idea of communism, which may be not exactly in line, but which always has the same invention and humor. And 36, the same thing in Shub, 36, an article, a pretty sad article by Shub in Kino, 22 April 36, Mistakes of Documentarism. Of course, she complains because documentary filming has been set aside after she's made a film about the building of the Moscow subway, etc., etc. Our first thought were only five or six of us still work in documentary film. Our first thought was opposing documentary to fiction film. That was, she writes, a left-wing disorder, down with acted film. Our second thought was fetishization of facts. Sometimes facts were seen as a material with which we could speculate in montage. Urbanism, formalism, schematism, lack of subject matter, lack of object, all of this found its place in our films. These faults were common to us all, but my colleagues of fiction could make one or two films in these years, not us. I understood that documentary is not the general way of Soviet film. I had long overcome the fetishization of facts and talked about it. Not the fact in itself, but our relationship to facts, our class-conscious attitude to reality, etc. I still think that artistic documentary, meaning feature-length documentary, is a necessary part of artistic cinematography. Finally, there's no doubt for me that one cannot put everything on screen by way of documentary film. There are themes that move me deeply as an artist, but it's not possible to represent them through method of documentary film. So this is quite a sad ending, which guaranteed, alas, her Shub's official position in the recognition of Soviet filmmakers, but not in the recognition of her right to work. Well, maybe we'll talk about all this later on this afternoon. I suppose we should make a break by now.